This is the Medicast, August 13th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast, episode 79. I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome you to this podcast. For all of you brand new listeners out there that are checking out the show, I want to welcome you especially. Take some time, head on over to medicast.com, check out all of the past episodes there, or there also in your iTunes store library. You can download past episodes if you've been subscribing via iTunes, and you can check out all of the other things that make the Medicast, I think, one of the best EMS podcasts out there right now. And of course, for all of you long-term listeners, I want to thank you for your efforts, your comments, your corrections, and all of the things you've done to make the Medicast the community effort that it is. So thanks to all of you listeners. To help keep the show afloat, make sure you tell your friends, your colleagues, your instructors, and your fellow students about the Medicast podcast and how it can help them become better EMS medical providers in the field. I've just gotten back with my family from a much-needed vacation and some time away with both my immediate family and some of my extended family, with my sister and my parents along. And we had a good, if not, well, at least it was very hot, I will say this, down in North Carolina. We were in the New Bern, North Carolina area, and really enjoyed that entire vicinity. I didn't get out and check out firehouses and stuff like I usually do. We just, it was just so hot. It was 100 degrees nearly every day, and I really became very aware of the necessity to hydrate and stay on top of things in heat-related emergencies. I guess it's the first time this year I've really experienced that kind of high heat over an extended period of time. And it was that hot, I think, every day we were there, except for yesterday, when we left, it kind of started to cool off a little bit. But anyway, I'm back, and I want to get back in the swing of things here. Got a few more weeks before school starts for me, and I start back into my final year working towards my nursing degree. And I'm going to continue working hard here on the Medicast and work on the website some more and get some things done that I plan to finish up before the end of the summer and have some new things available for you, the listeners, up there on the site. So over the coming weeks, we'll be looking for updates over there at the website at medicast.com, and I'm kind of refreshed now that I'm back from my vacation. Anyway, I think it's time now to look at some listener emails. First of all, I want to thank everybody that sent in links for my request for ECG sites. We were looking for some sites to help each other work on our EKG or ECG recognition. And we got that idea from listener Woody, who sent in an email to the show a couple of weeks ago. And so I want to just send out a blanket thank you. I got tons of emails with lots of links. I have updated the links that I posted last week while I was away that had some of the EKG sites in there. So if you've already seen that page with those links, I've added a couple more links to that page. So you want to head back and check it out from last week's blog posts over at the Medicast site. There's about 6 or 7 different sites and software links over there that can be used to help you if you're learning to read EKGs, or if you just want to look for a place that you can kind of keep yourself fresh and frosty on how to read EKG rhythms that you might not have seen in a while. So check it out, and I do, again, appreciate everybody's input there. The first email I pick up this week is from listener Benjamin, who's an EMTB in New York City, and he has spent some time as a college student living in a college town and saw a lot of alcohol-related emergencies. And he had a question about the prevalence of new stimulant drinks like Red Bull or some of the other high-energy drinks you see advertised and available on the store shelves. And he wondered what their effects were when combined with the effects of alcohol. And that's an excellent question, Benjamin. And I'm going to actually suspend the answer to this and put up a more full explanation on a post on the website later this week. So check back over at medicast.com later this week, Benjamin, and everybody else who might have questions about this, for a post and a link to an article that I found that looked at the stimulant effects of some of these sports drinks and also my take on the combination of stimulants like this and alcohol use. So check that out later this week over at medicast.com. And if you have comments or things you'd like to add to that, you can comment right on the webpage where that post is put up, and it'll be linked to that post for others to check out. I also got a voicemail on the voicemail line from listener Eddie, and here it is.
Hey, Jamie. My name is Eddie, and I am a resident of Texas, and I just want to say I thoroughly enjoy your program. I think I will be attending the EMT basic program that my local college offers this coming spring, and I was just curious any tips or advice you might have for a student entering the field of being an EMT paramedic, and just any advice you have would be more than appreciated. Thank you very much. I really enjoy your show. Thanks again.
And Eddie, I guess you're on the right track just by checking out shows like the Medicast and educating yourself about the different things that are going on in the EMS field and in other medical career fields. If you really haven't made your decision yet and you're looking at a variety of different ways to get involved with medical careers and medical fields, you may want to just check out a lot of information from a variety of sources. There's plenty of great EMS blogs out there that talk very candidly about what life is like on the street. I always recommend things like Rick Rosati's Mitigation Journal podcast, and his blog talks about disaster preparedness, which is something we all need to be knowledgeable about. Peter Canning's Street Watch blog, and his books that talk about his career as a paramedic, where he started and how he got into EMS. And all of these things are really a great resource for you to educate yourself about what to expect. And then just do your homework. When you start getting into school, just prepare yourself by following your syllabus and staying up with your reading and really trying to focus on keeping up with studying. That's the hardest thing. And don't take away time from your skills practice. You really do need to get your hands-on time with your skills, and nothing takes the place of actually practicing to do the things you'll need to handle in the field. So I hope that helps out, Eddie, and good luck in your future career as an EMT. Okay, I think we're finished up here with the EMS mail that I've gotten over the past week. And again, I want to thank everybody that sent all the links and information in. I do have some other things, but I'm going to push them until next week just because I had so many things come in this week. But keep that email coming. The suggestions, corrections, and comments on anything I've talked about here on the show or over at the website, please keep the email comments and information coming in here to the Medicast. Okay, let's jump right on in to this week's news items. And I think because I was just on vacation and living through ridiculously high heat while on vacation, I thought I would touch on an article I found that interviewed an EMT from the Virginia and North Carolina coastal areas. And he was talking about what he'd been experiencing over the past week when the East Coast had the recent heat wave. And he talks a lot about people drinking sodas and coffee and not drinking enough water. And experiences that he found where people were very aware of the high heat levels, even when they were out at the beach and doing things like getting in the water to cool off, drinking more fluids. And he said that actually at the highest point of the day, he wasn't getting as many calls as he was expecting to get from the high heat. He says he thinks it's because that people were more aware when there's a lot of news about high heat and heat waves, but when it's in the 80s and very humid, he actually thinks he has more calls because people are less aware of heat-related emergencies because they don't think that just because it's not as hot that they can't experience heat problems. And I think this is a good point to make. There's been a lot in the news about heat-related problems, and when your area experiences heat that's higher than normal or higher than the seasonal expectation, there's a lot of things in the news about heat-related emergencies and how to hydrate yourself. And yet, when it's normally hot for the summertime, there's not that much information out there, and people aren't as aware, and this information isn't staying in the front of people's minds. So it's, again, important to educate ourselves, educate our families, friends, and our communities about how to be aware of heat emergencies, how to understand the progression of heat emergencies, and how to make sure we're all getting plenty of water and taking opportunities to rest and cool off when necessary when working or playing out in hot weather. And check out this article over at the show notes, along with all the other links to the news items I'll be talking about today. The next item I have to touch on in the news comes from a Tallahassee, Florida newspaper site over at Tallahassee.com, and it talks about a paramedic retiring after 35 years on the job. And during the interview, this paramedic mentions that he remembers his first emergency call, which was actually the first emergency services call in his county. Prior to that time, all these calls were handled by funeral homes who took patients to hospitals in hearses. And this is something that I think we need to keep in our minds as we struggle with our low pay and the difficulties we have getting recognition for the medical training that we receive. It's the point that EMS is a very young career in medical terms. It's something that is only 30, 40, 50 years old tops. It's something that has only been around since the early 70s or late 60s. And it's a program that is still really in its infancy in many ways. And I know it's hard to be patient. I know it's hard to stand by while sometimes we don't get some of the recognition we deserve from other medical professionals that we deal with. But I also think that it's important for us to recognize the people who are the pioneers in our field, the people who went on the first call in the jurisdictions in which we're running. Who are these people? Who took the first ambulance call in your community? Are they still on the job? Are they still in the area? Maybe it's an opportunity for you to arrange for them to come in and talk to your service about their experiences if they've been retired for a while. It's an opportunity for us to learn about the local history of EMS, not just the global history of EMS. We learn about the global history of EMS in our EMT classes and learn about how EMS came about in our region in a larger sense. But what do we know about the people that were out there that struggled with equipment that was based for hospital use and not for emergency use in the field, that struggled and helped design the products that we take for granted today? I think this is something we need to keep in the forefront of our minds and understand that there's still a great deal of growth that needs to go on. And we see it in the changes that we have come down in our protocols and standing orders all the time. As things change, as understanding of the types of patients that we encounter in changes, we will continue to see the growth and change in our career field. And I think that's exciting. I think being in a young career like this is an exciting option. And I think we need to understand some of what where we came from. You might be surprised to find out how they handled certain cases back in the day. The next item in today's news stories is one that has a sad note to it. Two police officers in Morehouse Parish, Louisiana, were killed when responding to an apprehension of two suspects in double homicide. And these people apparently were on the run from Texas. There was a lead that they were in the area, and two police officers responded and were gunned down. Also, two EMTs were shot and wounded during the standoff that occurred in the area. And so we need to just kind of, first of all, keep the police officers in our thoughts and prayers, their families and their coworkers, as well as the pray for the continued recovery of the two EMTs who were shot and wounded. And we need to really keep our eyes open. It's just a reminder that when I end each episode with Scene Safety BSI, I'm not just doing it to keep you guys aware that are in testing situations to help remind you to remember to say it all the time. But it's also because I really honestly believe that we need to be more aware of our surroundings when we're on calls. We need to not just assume that the scene is safe when someone else says it's safe. We need to keep that index of suspicion about our surroundings, as well as an index of suspicion as we go through the assessment process with our patients. So I'll hopefully see more about this. You can follow up over at emsresponder.com, which is where I got this particular story from. And of course, you can find the link directly to this story in the show notes. Finally, I'll wrap up today's news with an item I found over at msnbc.com. And it has to do with a story that came out about new guidelines coming out from the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology, refining recommendations on the treatment of patients who are possibly having an MI and experiencing chest pain. And this is a refinement of some 2002 recommendations on this particular area of cardiology treatment. One of the things that they're doing is they're differentiating between high-risk and low-risk patients, patients that are experiencing unstable angina, or also non-ST elevation MIs. Now, non-ST elevation MIs are really heart attacks that have not progressed to the point where the ongoing damage to the heart muscle is showing up in the EKG yet. In other words, this is an early stage MI, and you can't diagnose a non-ST elevation MI using a 12 lead. You have to go with your physical examination and assessment findings and move forward from there until you can get the patient to the hospital where they can get some definitive testing done on their cardiac enzyme levels in order to determine if they actually are having an MI. So in the meantime, you need to treat these patients. And it's an indication that we need to be more proactive with low-risk patients who might previously have been left to go with just some observation. If you have a patient with any level of chest pain or any signs that might be associated with a cardiac risk, we need to be more proactive, at least get these patients on oxygen in the field, and then monitor them carefully and decide whether or not we need to follow up with other treatments like nitroglycerin, like starting an IV and giving them some fluids. All of these things to keep an idea of, in the back of our minds, that index of suspicion that I talked about in the last story, that index of suspicion that an MI might in fact be going on. And the idea is that by treating the so-called low-risk patients more aggressively, we may end up reducing their risk of progressing to a high-risk patient at a later time, either in the same episode or in a future episode of chest pain or cardiac-related symptoms. So check out this article in the show notes, and you can get a sense of what this particular story is talking about. And I think that'll lead me rather nicely into this week's tip and trick of the week. Over the next couple of weeks, I will be looking at some of the National Registry skill sheets. I'll be covering two ALS skill sheets this week, and next week's episode, I will be covering two BLS skill sheets in an effort, an ongoing effort to try to get all of the skill sheets under the belt here at the Medicast for those of you that are looking for some study assistance while you're preparing for your National Registry practical exam. First of all, this week I'm going to be looking at the two cardiology sheets, and one of them is static cardiology and the other is dynamic cardiology. These are, I think, some of the particular sheets that tend to get people a little more bound up as they try to work with what they have on hand and don't really relax and take a chance to really step back and look at the situation as a whole. So with that in mind, let's start off with static cardiology. Static cardiology is a situation where you're going to be shown a series of EKG strips. They're going to be 6-second EKG strips with a short description of the patient. And by short description, I mean maybe just a few sentences. You know, something like, you have a 66-year-old male who's complaining of shortness of breath and is visibly diaphoretic. And then you're going to have a strip. So the first thing you need to understand is the instructor does not have more information than you have already been given. So they are not going to be able to tell you what a pulse ox is or anything like that. You need to go with just what you have. And this is actually to your benefit. So when you get a static cardiology strip, you want to take a deep breath, just like I do and tell you to do in all of these practical testing situations. You want to take a deep breath and you want to look at the information you have. Don't add anything else into it. Don't read anything else into it. You just have what you have in front of you. And that makes it easier. Don't add more to it than is already there. Next, you want to look at your EKG strip. Now, these are things you should have been studying. And one thing you need to understand is these strips are meant to be model EKG representations. These are strips that are meant to be the easiest version of this, the given rhythm to read. They're not trying to trip you up. They're not trying to trick you. If it's going to be a second degree heart block, it is going to clearly be a second degree heart block. You will not be able to apply other rules to other cardiac rhythms to it. You will just have a second degree heart block. So you need to just step back and think about how you learn to read EKGs. I've provided a link in the show notes that links back to the post from last week that has all the EKG sites and software links on it so you can go over there and practice reading EKGs. You can review the rules for the different rhythms that are out there. But ultimately, you need to then make a diagnosis of what the rhythm is. That's all. That's the first thing you need to do. And that's worth a point for each strip. And then you have 2 points for what you provide as a diagnosis. Well, first of all, give every patient oxygen. You're never wrong giving them oxygen. So you diagnose the strip. Then you're going to look, is it fast? Is it too slow? Does it require adjustment with some kind of medication? Or does it need to be just monitored? Remember, there may be patients out there that all they need is oxygen and continued monitoring. So don't be afraid to make that your decision and then stand by it, okay? So static cardiology, that's really all there is to it. You're going to get a series of strips, 3 or 4 strips, that you're going to have to review. You're going to get checked off on each of the 4 strips that you get, and you need to just take it slow and relax, take a breath, and then make it as simple as possible. If it's If it's fast and irregular, and it's irregularly irregular, it's probably atrial fibrillation. So you treat atrial fibrillation. This is the way you need to kind of think about things. Don't make EKGs harder than they are. And I think you'll have a lot of success as you move forward in this particular station of static cardiology. Dynamic cardiology is a little different. Dynamic cardiology is really the assessment of how you're going to run a cardiac arrest situation, a situation where you have a patient who is going to be at some point during the progression pulseless and apneic and going to be requiring advanced cardiac measures like defibrillation. First of all, we're going to start off with the things that you need to do. Remember, you are allowed to inspect your equipment. If there's a heart monitor there that you are unfamiliar with, please ask the instructor to demonstrate its proper use so that you can make the proper decision should you need to synchronize cardioversion or should you need to provide pacing. They need to provide you with equipment that you're familiar with or instruct you in the use of the equipment. You're going to start off, as in every situation, by verbalizing and or taking scene safety and BSI precautions. You're going to check the patient for level of responsiveness. Again, this is all your CPR training. So the beginning of this is going to start off like that. You're going to check responsiveness. You're going to go through the progression of checking ABCs. You're going to initiate CPR if appropriate. You will have somebody there to be your phantom assistant. So once you initiate CPR, you can probably just say, I'm going to have my partner start CPR, or the instructor will be your assistant on scene. You're then going to quickly attach the EKG monitor or apply the paddles for a quick look. And I recommend that you do your quick look capability first. You will then need to correctly identify the initial rhythm. Now, again, this is just like the static cardiology. Don't make the rhythms more difficult than they need to be. These are going to be rhythms generated by a rhythm generator, a machine that is going to produce a near perfect version of the rhythm you're looking at. So if it's asystole, it's going to be a flat line. If it's ventricular tachycardia, it's not going to look like SVT. You're not going to see that kind of organized QRS. You're going to see that wide salt, that narrow sawtooth of the VTAC. You're going to then, after you interpret the rhythm initially, you're going to appropriately manage the initial rhythm, whether a shock is indicated or not, whether you need to go ahead and begin IV therapy and proceed to give a medication, airway management. You're going to note any changes in the rhythm following your treatment and make a diagnosis of the new rhythm, if any. You're going to then check the patient's pulse and see if there's a blood pressure. You're going to then manage the next rhythm. You're going to note changes in the rhythm as they come up. You want to make sure you continue to regularly check patient's pulse and vital signs in general if necessary. You'll then get a third rhythm change. You will appropriately identify and then manage the third rhythm. And you'll then note if there's a change in the third rhythm. You'll again check pulse, vital signs if appropriate, and you'll get a fourth rhythm change. Identify the change and manage the appropriate change. And of course, there's always points involved by applying oxygen, high flow oxygen, and airway management at the appropriate times during this situation. There are a series of critical criteria that you need to be aware of. If you fail to deliver an initial shock in a timely manner due to a delay in machine use or provide treatments other than CPR with simple airway adjuncts, if you fail to deliver second and third shocks as appropriate without delay, other than as required to assess the rhythm and to recharge your paddles, you fail to verify your rhythm after and before delivering each shock, failure to ensure the safety of yourself and others. Remember to give that I'm clear, you're clear, we're all clear. You also want to make sure that you know how to use the machine. And this is why it's important for you to check over your equipment so that you don't make a mistake with how the machine works. Again, that's a critical fail point. So make sure your instructor and preceptor takes time with you if it's not a machine you are familiar with. Now, they're not going to do this if this is in your own testing center and you're expected to know how the defibrillator works already. But if you're traveling to a distant testing center and the equipment is a different brand name than you're used to, make sure that they provide you with this time and service to do so. You then want to make sure that you follow these other critical criteria. You want to make sure that you don't misinterpret the rhythm and fail to demonstrate acceptable shock sequence. You can also be failed by having a failure to order the initiation or resumption of CPR. So remember, after that shock's done, get people back on the chest right away. Again, remember, CPR stays in place until just before the shock, and CPR goes back in place right after the shock is completed. Failure to order correct management of the airway with simple adjuncts to start and then advanced airway when indicated by the algorithm. Furthermore, you want to make sure that you don't fail to order administration of oxygen at an appropriate time, that you fail to diagnose or treat more than two rhythms correctly. So again, if you make a mistake on a rhythm and then you catch it, it's not the end of the world. So you need to remember that. You just don't want to sit there and go, "Oh my God, I'm done," and walk out of the room. No. You need to understand that a critical fail point is if you fail to diagnose or treat two or more rhythms. So you get one, and I don't want to say it's for free, because if you miss enough other things, you're going to fail anyway. But if you just make a mistake identifying the rhythm and you correct yourself and go back and treat it correctly, that's okay. All right, that's all right. You need to miss two rhythms in order to fail. You want to order fail to order administration of the appropriate drug, or you order the administration of an inappropriate drug or a drug in lethal dosage. So this is where you need to go back to your study notes and your protocols that you're using for your national registry test and make sure you understand the appropriate dosages for the testing situation. That's going to be possibly different than the protocols you may eventually operate under. So you want to use whatever your testing situation is ordering. Finally, if you fail to correctly diagnose or adequately treat VFib, VTAC, or asystole, any of the critical fatal cardiac rhythms, you are going to be failed immediately on those. But if you have, say, multiple multifocal PVCs going on and you fail to diagnose that correctly immediately, but then pick up on it and you come back and administer amiodarone or come back and administer lidocaine appropriately, that's not necessarily going to fail you in this test. Again, this is one of those things where you need to think about the process. Run through the ideas of the different mega codes you might run into in your mind. Get together with your classmates and practice throwing rhythms at each other. You don't need a heart monitor to do this. You can have one of you be the patient and lay down, and the other one sits there and hands you a description and a rhythm, kind of like static cardiology, and then go through the process of, all right, I'm going to put the pads on. All right, we're initiating CPR. Go ahead and start CPR. Put the quick look pads on, see what's going on, and then determine if a shock's indicated. Continue CPR up to the point of shock. Clear everybody. Shock them. Get back on the chest. Then go ahead and initiate your medical management as necessary. All of these things need to happen in the order of the American Heart Association ACLS guidelines. And so, again, you need to check with your notes, practice, get your hands on time, and then just relax into it. I know that's hard to do. I was a complete wreck the day of my testing, but one of the things I tried to remember to do each time was just to take that mental break, that deep breath, and then go into it. Give myself a pause to calm down. because I did know this stuff. I had been studying it, and I just needed to give myself a chance to bring it out of memory and do the work that I needed to do. So hopefully this helps out. I'm not going to do a Med of the Week this week. I'm just going to do this week and next week two of the skill sheets from ALS, and then next week two of the skill sheets from the BLS testing. And there's links in the show notes to the National Registry site where you can download all of the skill sheets, as well as a link in the show notes to the practice site where you can head over and check out all the links I put up last week for EKG practice over at the medicast.com site. And so that's going to wrap up this week's tip and trick of the week, and I hope this is helpful for you. And that is going to wrap up another episode of the Medicast. I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to hang out and listen to the show. And make sure you send over your comments over here to the Medicast at the email address podmedic@mac.com. You can also leave comments over on the show notes page, as well as on any of the blog posts over at medicast.com. At the bottom of each entry, you'll see a link there where you can click and add comments and view comments left by other listeners. And this is a great way for you to add your two cents worth, to add links of things that you think might be of interest related to what's on there. If you are doing this for the first time, I do have to approve your comment to make sure that you are not spamming the site. But once you've been approved, you'll be able to leave comments anytime you'd like to over at the Medicast site. And there's a whole group of listeners that are active supporters of the Medicast by leaving comments over there. And I do appreciate you taking the time to share your information, your knowledge, and the links that you have with the Medicast listeners. Also, don't forget, you can call into the show like Eddie did this episode and leave your comments on the voicemail line by calling in 941-306-3342. And it's a great way for you to contribute to the show in a different way and have your comments heard by everyone else here at the Medicast in this audio format. And it's a great way for me to have a chance to hear who you are a little bit better than maybe an email, because, you know, I don't get a sense of who you are sometimes, but hearing your voice can help me put a voice to the name and helps me generate a better picture of who you are. So I appreciate that whenever you do that. Again, that's 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. And that's a great way to contact us here at the voicemail line. I will wrap up, as I always do, with some excellent PodSafe music. And this, again, this week is from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And this week's artist is an artist by the name of Ray Youngkin. Ray is an artist who produced a song called Rescue Me, and I think it talks a little bit to us in the rescue services field, whether it's police, fire, or EMS. And I think it has something to say to all of us. So I guess that's it. I want you all to remember to stay safe out there, so I'll end up, as I always do, by saying, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, Scene Safety, BSI.
I step outside at 2 a.m., see the city sleeping tight. Could be this job, man, but I don't know that I'll make it home tonight. It's not like there'll be somebody waiting there for me, 'cause I am not the hero everybody says I'll be. But I'm a long way from leaving this town, yeah, the city of angels. I'm a long, long, long way from caving in. Oh yeah. But living and dying like brothers in arms, for swallowing sin at the sound of alarm. I wonder why can't somebody rescue me? myself between my job, my family, and my ghosts. Yeah, but I've got bigger problems, and who needs me the most? Can't they see I'm just a man? I can't turn the world around. Hell, I can barely keep my own 2 feet firmly on the ground. But I'm a long way from leaving this town. Hey, hey, the city of angels. I'm a long, long, long way from caving in. Oh, yeah. But living and dying like brothers in arms, for swallowing sin at the sound of a long. Town. Hey, hey, the city of angels. I'm a long, long, long way from caving in. You better believe it. Yeah, but living and dying, my brothers in arms, for swallowing sin at the sound of alarm.